This is Gangrel, you're banging the bang, listening to the Solo Monster.
Big shout out to Scott Silbernagel, one of our loyal Sound Off followers, for getting former WWE superstar Gangrel on video, giving a shout out to yours truly, which is what you heard there at the top of the show. Video is also up on my YouTube channel, The Solo Monster. That's my username there. The Brood was a badass faction back in the day, and Gangrel had a pretty kick-ass entrance himself, and I do miss those days. This is episode 222, by the way, of the Solo Monster Sounds Off here on SEScoops.com. It is Sunday, June 10th, 2012. I am the Solo Monster. I also want to give a shout-out at the top here to another fan of the show, Steve Willerett, who works as a professional illustrator. In his spare time, Steve has drawn pictures of a ton of different wrestlers from over the decades, including Dick Murdoch and Magnum T.A., Rowdy Roddy Piper, CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, Hulk Hogan, and everybody in between. You can find them all on his blog, battleroyalwithcheese.blogspot.com. That's Battle Royale with an E at the end. With cheese is with a Z, not an S. So again, that's battleroyalwithcheese.blogspot.com. Or you can go to facebook.com/battleroyalwithcheese. He's got a page up there as well. The guy is ultra-talented, and now you can add yet another legend to his list, me. That's right. In celebration of today being the two-year anniversary of our Facebook profile page, I have posted his illustration of yours truly with the old WWF Winged Eagle title belt, no less, which looks much better than this supposed new championship they're debuting soon. So check it out. I put it up on Facebook. The champ is here on Facebook. I was blown away by it when he showed it to me. I just love it. So head over there right now and check it out. Then check out Steve's blog. So big thanks to him. I really do have the best fans in the world. You guys rock. By the way, I caught the Manny Pacquiao-Timothy Bradley fight last night from Vegas. What a load of horseshit that was. Fight goes to a decision that should have been an easy victory for Pacquiao, and they give it, and Pacquiao's title, no less, to Bradley. I mean, I was half expecting to look over by the judges' table and see John Laurinaitis sitting there with David Otunga next to him. I mean, I'm no fan of Manny Pacquiao. Just based on what I've seen and read about the guy, he comes across as a bit of a prick to me. And I don't know what the hell was going on when he disappeared from his dressing room and was holding up the fight, apparently to watch the end of the Celtics Heat game or something, but he won that fight. And for the judges to give it to Bradley is just yet another example of why MMA, even at a time when it's not as popular as it was, say, 3 or 4 years ago, has long passed boxing by. You know, boxing is a great sport in and of itself, and I mean, it's been around for just decades and decades with tons of legendary fighters. The sport itself is great, but it's been corrupted by seedy, slimy, skeevy old men with virtually no stars left to speak of. I mean, one is sitting in jail, and the other one lost a fight that most people think he should have won. Why would anyone want to plunk down money and invest in a 12-round fight whose outcome has already been predetermined? Even pro wrestling fans don't want to plunk down money these days on pay-per-view matches that they already know are predetermined. I mean, in theory, you could do the rematch in November. You know, Pacquiao wins his belt back, and that sets up the Mayweather fight for next year. But to me, it doesn't matter. The fix is in. You know, don't insult your audience, because when you do, all you're going to do is alienate them and chase them away. Just ask WWE. We'll get to WWE later, by the way. I want to talk about TNA first, since they have a pay-per-view tonight. And because for the second week in a row, Impact was a better show than Raw, and they deserve praise for that. Bizarro land indeed. TNA Slammiversary is tonight on pay-per-view. They're, of course, celebrating their 10-year anniversary this year. Actually, this month, I think, TNA is. And it is tonight on pay-per-view from the DFW Metroplex in Dallas, Texas, which is notable in that it is not the Impact Zone. No offense to the people in Orlando, but TNA on the road in new buildings and new venues in front of new fans, I think, is a good thing. And apparently, based on what Dixie Carter had to say on Twitter, TNA may end up tonight with their biggest crowd of any U.S. show they've ever had, which I think the current record may have been that first Base Brawl show here in Brooklyn 2 years ago, which had close to 6,000 people. There were a lot of people there. I was among them in the baseball stadium, which fits. It's a minor league baseball team, but for a minor league stadium, it's pretty big. It fits a capacity of about 7,500, although with standing room only, they've had close to 10,000 people there. And TNA had about 6,000 people for that show. If it wasn't 6,000, it was pretty close. So I think that might still be the record. I could be wrong. And if Dixie is to be believed, they may break that tonight, which would be nice to see. So there is that. Now, speaking of Dixie Carter and Twitter, she also mentioned a couple days ago on Twitter that Christian would be joining them for the show. Although she never actually said he would necessarily be on the pay-per-view. She actually said he would be in Dallas. Would Christian Cage, as he was known in his TNA days. Of course, Christian is currently on the active WWE roster. He is the reigning Intercontinental Champion. And this has to do with the whole negotiation to allow Ric Flair to be at the Hall of Fame back in April. And obviously, this is what TNA got in exchange for Ric Flair's participation in the Hall of Fame. My sense is that Christian may only be there in Dallas to film some stuff backstage for an upcoming DVD release. Clearly, they were not allowed to mention his appearance on TV on the Go Home show. At least I hope not, because if they were, would have been kind of dumb, I think, for them not to say something on Impact on Thursday about Christian being there. And they did not. They didn't mention anything. It was just Dixie's tweet. Now they have it up on the TNA Wrestling website as well. So whether he actually shows up on the show, you know, my sense is that if he shows up on the show, I don't know that he would get an entrance and actually be introduced like that. He may just be shown in the crowd, kind of like Robbie from the Highlanders was many years ago, for which he got in big trouble for that. But we'll see. We'll see what they do, if anything, with Christian tonight. If he's not on the pay-per-view, I would not be shocked. But he is in Dallas or on his way. And it's an interesting situation because I can't really remember a time where a WWE contracted star was allowed to be on another wrestling show, aside from perhaps the whole deal with Taz back in 2000. When that was a very bizarre situation, in that you had Taz, who at the time was a contracted WWE talent, being allowed to participate in a championship match at an ECW show against a guy who was on his way to WCW. And so essentially Mike Awesome, who was then the champion, lost his title to Taz, so a WCW guy lost an ECW title to a WWF guy. It was a very bizarre situation. And so there have been very few situations like that over the years. And you can kind of lump this in with that. It's just a very bizarre deal. As far as the pay-per-view itself, just a quick rundown here of the card. Of course, on top, it is Sting challenging for the TNA Heavyweight Championship against Bobby Roode. These men had a match on pay-per-view, I think, about 2 or 3 months ago. So this is not the first meeting. Obviously, they had a match on Impact a couple weeks ago, Lumberjack match, where Sting made Bobby Roode tap out clean in the Scorpion Deathlock, and he beat Bobby Roode clean again in the finish of the main event on Impact this past Thursday night, which would lead one to believe that Bobby Roode is not going to lose 3 times in a row to Sting, at least I hope not. It's actually quite the sensible way to build up a match, where on television leading into it, if you insist on putting these guys in the same match against each other, which I'm not a big fan of, the challenger goes over to give the impression that he has the chance to win the championship on Sunday. You know, it wouldn't make any sense at all if Bobby Roode was in there with Sting beating him every week, because then people, I mean, why would they buy the pay-per-view? So in this case, this would lead you to believe that Sting would win the championship. I don't expect that to happen. I hope not. I would expect Bobby Roode somehow, maybe through some chicanery or something, to go over on Sting and keep his title. We have Christopher Daniels and Kazarian against AJ Styles and Kurt Angle for the TNA Tag Team titles. Should be a very good match, I mean, considering the talent that's in there. And, of course, the storyline ongoing with Daniels and AJ, and I'll talk more about that in a second when I give my thoughts on Impact. How that plays into this match, I don't know. It's hard to kind of make a prediction. Does it really matter at this point? Do any tag titles really in any company, except maybe Ring of Honor, really mean anything these days? I really don't think so. But if I had to pick people to go over in this match, I'd go with Daniels and Kazarian just because they're an entertaining act. And I don't think you should take the titles off them so quickly. AJ and Kurt's one of those makeshift tag teams. And Daniels and Kazarian's a makeshift tag team as well. Again, they were single stars before they got lumped together. But the whole act between them, it works. They play very well off each other. They're very entertaining. And I would hate for them to lose this match. So I'm going to go with Daniels and Kazarian. We have a triple threat match, Rob Van Dam, Jeff Hardy, and Mr. Anderson. The winner will meet the champion, whomever it may be, whether it's Sting or Bobby Roode, on Impact, the live Impact coming up this Thursday night. And so whoever wins this becomes the number one contender. And again, it's three guys that really just haven't been doing much of late. I would say you can have Bobby Roode retain the title and go up against Van Dam or Hardy. If I had a pick between the two, I might just go with Jeff Hardy, just because you might get a better match with Jeff Hardy, and Jeff Hardy is the most popular guy in TNA. And so, therefore, it's kind of like with John Cena in WWE. He's the face of the company. He is the most over guy. He is the biggest star. As much as it pains me to say it, it would make sense for somebody like Cena to have the championship if John Cena is going to continue to headline a main event pay-per-view after pay-per-view. And Jeff Hardy is clearly the most over babyface, most over talent on the TNA roster, sells the most merchandise and all that. And so have Bobby Roode win and have Jeff Hardy win and have a championship match on Impact would seem to make sense to me. Anybody but Mr. Anderson. I don't need to see Mr. Anderson challenging for the title on TV. I just don't have to see it. Then we have the battle between Joseph Park Esquire and Bully Ray. And if you watched Impact on Thursday night, which I'm sure many of you did not, the stipulation now is that Bully Ray cannot be held accountable for any injuries he incurs on Joseph Park in this match. And Abyss, the monster Abyss, is back. He has vowed to appear on the Slammiversary pay-per-view in some form or fashion and show Joseph Park and Bully Ray how dead he really is. Of course, the storyline here is that Abyss has been missing. He was killed off, supposedly, by Bully Ray, and obviously Abyss is not dead, and he's going to show the world he is still very much alive this Sunday at the pay-per-view. Now, it's going to be interesting how they handle this, obviously, because I think we all know, you know, the joke here is that Joseph Park and Abyss are as one. Joseph Park is Abyss, although he does that character so much better. I said it last week, it's almost a crime to bring Abyss back if that means the death of the Joseph Park character. Maybe it won't. Maybe they've got some other idea to keep this storyline going. I would hate for it to end at Slammiversary. I feel, I don't know, I just find the Joseph Park character immensely entertaining. I think he's very, very good in that role. I never really got any pleasure when I would watch TNA of watching Abyss scar up his body and just destroy himself in, you know, broken shards of glass and thumbtacks and bleeding all over himself. That's what the that's what the Abyss character is, essentially. And I don't need to see that. You know, and Abyss cuts these very dark, kind of in-character, corny promos. He's kind of like the Kane of WWE, or Kane of TNA, I should say. And, you know, Joseph Park is a more compelling character. Now, maybe a couple more months and I'll kind of be bored of it, but I'm not at that point yet. So I don't know what they've got planned. Obviously, there's going to be some sort of storyline plot twist here, and we'll see what they do with it. This is one of the matches that if I'm watching Slammiversary, and I'm not sure yet if I am or not, but if I'm watching this pay-per-view, this may be the match I want to see the most, just to see what they do with it. And Bully Ray is just terrific. He's fantastic in his role. As much as I'd love to see Bully Ray on a much bigger scale, maybe even fighting for or defending a world championship as a badass bully type of heel, I feel like him going to WWE at some point, which, who knows, you know, could very well happen, would be the worst thing that could possibly happen to the character, because I don't see WWE allowing Bully Ray to be Bully Ray as he should be. At least in TNA, they pretty much give him the freedom to go out there, to be a badass, to mouth off to people and use some salty language and just be a completely unlikable character, and he's very good at that. And it's hard to make a prediction not knowing this is going to be more, I think, of a storyline match, in that whatever twist they have planned will probably factor into the finish here. I would go with Bully Ray, I guess, as my pick, but I actually have no idea what's going to happen here, and that's a good thing when you're not able to predict it, and they've got a storyline that somehow hooks you, and it's not completely ridiculous. I like it, so we'll see what they do. Gail Kim will defend her Knockouts Championship against Miss Tessmacher. Miss Tessmacher earned the shot by winning a four-way Knockouts match on Impact that actually went 10 minutes, believe it or not. The women were in there for over 10 minutes of ring time on Thursday night, which is unheard of. If you're a WWE fan, if you watch Raw every week, you know what you get with those Divas matches. And most weeks now, they don't even have a Divas match. They're losing, actually, Divas by the week, it seems. The Bellas are gone, and now Kelly might be gone. Maurice has been gone for a while. But the Knockouts, I got to give them credit. It wasn't a bad match. They give them time, and Miss Tessmacher, from what she used to be, I believe Miss Tessmacher was the one that Eric Bischoff once referred to on TV as like a whore or something like that. And to go from being a whore to being a pretty good worker is it's impressive. So Tess Mocker and Gail Kim. Obviously, I'm going to go with Gail Kim here just because Gail Kim is the superior performer. And I just think she should go over in this match. Austin Aries and Samoa Joe will have a match. I believe their first encounter in a TNA ring, unless I missed something. They kind of started something on Impact Thursday. Joe confronted Aries backstage before Aries went out for his match, and then Joe cost him the match against Crimson. Unless I missed, I've only been watching Impact consistently for 2 weeks now, so it's entirely possible that there was some sort of interaction between Joe and Aries that I completely missed, but I'm not aware of it, so I'm not quite sure why this feud started. It just seems like it kind of started out of thin air. But I don't care, because I'm sure the two of them will have a great match. And I would imagine that Samoa Joe maybe will go over to keep this going. Because if Aries just beats him in their first match, I'm not really sure where you go from there, so I'll just go with Joe. D-Von and Garrett Bischoff will team up against Robbie E and Robbie T. I just really don't care about this match, quite frankly. I'll go with D-Von and Garrett, just because they're seemingly getting a push. Crimson has issued an open challenge to anybody. He was making a... He made a crack about Goldberg on Impact on Thursday about, you know, that other guy. My streak has been much more impressive and longer than his. And, of course, Goldberg on Twitter was asked about it. He had some not-so-nice things to say because that's Bill Goldberg. And I would love it if Ryback accepted this challenge. Just send Ryback out there. He's a hungry guy. He wants to be fed. Just send Ryback and Crimson are... Well, I was going to say they're kind of identical, but they're really not. But I guess they're both kind of doing the Goldberg streak gimmick right now. That's the only kind of common thread between the two of them. So I say put the two of them in there together and may the best man win. And apparently there's another match on this pay-per-view tonight between Kid Cash and Hernandez. And I mentioned about Aries and Joe and how that kind of came out of thin air. What the fuck is up with this match? Where the hell did this come from? Kid Cash and Hernandez? I haven't even seen these guys on television in weeks. Months. I don't know where this match came from, but apparently they're going to wrestle on pay-per-view, so there you go. That is the Slammiversary show. They will also announce their first inductee into the new TNA Hall of Fame. AJ Styles is as good a pick as any, I think. You could put Jeff Jarrett in there, but I don't know. Jeff Jarrett, last time we saw him on TV, was the heel, and... I don't know, it would be weird. He does deserve to go in at some point. But hey, you know, put AJ Styles in there, put Don West in there since Don West is on his way out. I would still be in favor of my idea, which is to put Randy Savage in there, but I know they probably won't. So we'll find out. We'll find out tonight who the new inductee into the Hall of Fame is. Another Hall of Fame that has no physical building, so it's just kind of, it's in the air, is the TNA Hall of Fame. It's in the mind of Dixie Carter. I want to just talk about Impact for a second. I'm not going to go through the entire show. I just touched on some of the key things from the show on Thursday night, which I thought was another good show. Not perfect, but an enjoyable 2 hours that was not difficult for me to sit through. I had to DVR it. I'm a proud new DVR operator here at home. And Impact was the first show I DVR'd. It was a success, I am happy to announce. It did not get cut off, so I came home and watched Impact, and I enjoyed it. And I thought, again, it was a much better show than Raw. Which I'll rant about in a second. But the other thing from Impact I did want to talk about was the storyline with Dixie Carter and AJ Styles, which is probably one of the most compelling storylines, probably the most compelling storyline in TNA, and perhaps in either TNA or WWE right now. I don't know where it goes, which, much like the Bully Ray-Joseph Park angle, is a good thing. As long as they've got a decent payoff for it in the end. You know, because if this were Vince McMahon in WWE, they'd have this storyline. The direction it would go in would change 1,000 times, and therefore nothing would make any sense. And with TNA, it seems as though, anyway, they have a sense of where they're going to go with this. Now, that doesn't mean the storyline is perfect, of course. Why Christopher Daniels can literally physically assault Dixie Carter and shove her down like he did on Thursday night, why she wouldn't just fire him. I mean, is Christopher Daniels really like the John Cena or the CM Punk of TNA? Is it really going to make a damn bit of difference if you fire his ass? Of course not. So why she doesn't just fire him and get rid of him and or Kazarian is a little bit bizarre. I think they may have made mention of some sort of ironclad contract, unless I'm just making that up, which that is so played out. You know, it's just such a cop-out to me. Anytime you want to do a storyline and it doesn't make any sense why this person is doing evil things and not getting fired or punished for it, you just say, just say he has an ironclad contract. Why would Christopher Daniels, of all people, have an ironclad contract? I mean, he's a great worker, but what's so goddamn special about him that you would give him some sort of contract like that? You know, again, is he John Cena? Is he Randy Orton? Of course not. So that's kind of stupid. That part of it really doesn't make any sense to me. But for what they did on Thursday, the way they opened Impact, I thought was a really unique, kind of hot way to open the show. They showed some footage that did not air from when Impact the previous weekend did. They showed Dixie Carter on the warpath going backstage. And again, if you don't like Dixie Carter as a character, you're probably not going to like the storyline at all. And she's not a favorite of mine. But I'm just commenting on the storyline itself, which they've actually they've piqued my interest. They've gotten me involved in the storyline. And they showed Dixie backstage going into the production truck and, you know, confronting David Sahadi, who once worked in production for many years for WWE and was responsible for a lot of those great video packages that we used to see, 10 years ago. And she's reading him the riot act in the truck. And again, this is where the logic hole comes in, because she's threatening to fire him, and she's threatening to fire all these other people except the actual wrestlers that started this in the first place. So, but if you put that aside, if you just kind of brush that off for a second, while acknowledging that that doesn't make any sense, this was compelling TV. I mean, this really was. And then they show Dixie in the ring, and she's about to reveal to the world exactly what's going on, and then the heels come out to interrupt, and Daniels kind of shoves her down to the corner. When she puts her hands on him, that brings out AJ to the ring, and people are going nuts. Then Dixie's husband, Serge, comes out. Serge works in a backstage capacity for TNA, and he comes out to comfort his wife, turns his attention to AJ, and wallops him right in the face. And I saw where some people were like, oh my god, I can't believe that AJ had a sell for Serge, you know, a non-wrestler. It didn't bother me, just because it is realistic to think that if this were real, and Serge believed that Dixie was having an affair with this wrestler, and the wrestler was standing in front of him in the ring, you lose all of your inhibitions. Of course you're going to go after the guy, even if you yourself may get killed. You know, it's not like he's going after Ryback or the great Khali. He's going after AJ Styles. And I love AJ Styles. He's a great wrestler, but he's a small guy. I don't see where, you know, a jilted husband would be afraid to go after AJ Styles. So he was angry. He slapped him in the face, and AJ went down. AJ got right back up. It's not like he had to lay on the ground selling it. And Serge walked off. That to me, more than anything else, is what didn't make sense. Because if this guy thinks AJ is sleeping around with his wife, one shot to the face, in my opinion, is not enough. And if nothing else, you would grab your wife and take her out of the ring. You wouldn't want your wife to be anywhere near this guy. But instead, all he did was he slapped him in the face once and then walked off. And AJ ended up leaving arm in arm with Dixie. So again, that part to me didn't make a whole lot of sense. But I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt here, because aside from those little plot holes, I like this storyline. It's intriguing. It's interesting. I don't know where they're going with it. It gives AJ Styles something to do. Apparently the ratings, the quarter hours, bear out the fact that there is a genuine interest in this angle, and it puts AJ Styles in a top spot, even though he doesn't have the title. It puts him in a top spot right now when he deserves to have some of that spotlight shined on him after being pushed down for so long. So I just want to give TNA some credit for it, and just say that, you know, if you haven't been giving Impact a chance, God knows for the longest time I didn't, because TNA had just, and still does, have a horrible reputation. I mean, you can only put on so many horrible TV shows for so many years before people just lose interest and they lose faith and they just refuse to go back. And in this case, I said when Impact went live, I was going to give them a chance. And I've watched 2 full episodes now, back-to-back consecutive weeks, and I've liked what I've had to see. And it's funny that a lot of this turnaround to the people that have been watching Impact for the last few months, they credit it with Vince Russo leaving. When Russo left, it seemed as though the show kind of changed for the better. It didn't happen overnight, but little things started to happen. They give things more time to breathe. They have a couple of key storylines that are developing, and you don't know where they're going to go, but they're kind of interesting. And it's funny how that works. When a guy that has no business booking professional wrestling and thinks pro wrestling is a dirty word happens to leave your company after causing so much chaos and carnage for years, chasing so many people off because he didn't know what the fuck he was doing, you get rid of him, you cut the cancer out, and things start to get better. It's funny how that works. So I would say give Impact a chance. Some people won't, and that's fine. And again, I'm part of me is waiting for the other shoe to drop here. That's not me being a pessimist. That's just me being a realist. And Impact will not have a great show every week, but I'm willing to give them a chance. Maybe even for the entire summer, for the entire length of their live run. For a month, for 2 months. And then evaluate over a period of 4 weeks, 6 weeks, exactly how good the shows are. Because this is coming, TNA's live shows, at a time when, in my opinion, WWE is in big trouble. Okay? And I'm going to talk about WWE right now. WWE's lack of good programming, in my opinion, at least on Monday nights, because Raw is their main show. So I'm judging it mostly by Raw and not so much SmackDown. TNA is the beneficiary of that. WWE's shitty shows could not have come at a better time, in my opinion, for TNA. The ratings may not bear that out because the numbers for TNA really haven't gone up in the last 2 weeks since they've gone live. They did better this week than they did last week, but it could not have come at a better time because I really think that there are, and I get emails from people who say, you know what, I've given up, that's it, I'm done, I'm not watching WWE anymore, your podcast is the only link I have now to wrestling, or at least to the WWE product, because they have done such a fantastic job recently of chasing people away with their awful shows and their awful storylines, and the fact that they just don't seem to give a shit when it comes to the little things. You know, it's one thing to have a storyline with one plot hole, but when you have six plot holes every week and it's hard to keep track of what's going on, and it's just people can't stomach it, and so they stop watching. And a lot of people have turned to Impact strictly because they want to watch wrestling, but they just can't take WWE anymore, so TNA is the only alternative out there, and so they watch Impact. And I think what will happen is people will start to realize that, you know what, this TNA show ain't that bad, and if WWE doesn't improve, I really think they're in deep trouble. Not that TNA is going to suddenly overtake them. That's just not going to happen. But they're driving people away. And there's a lot of different reasons for that, and I'll talk about Raw in a second, but there's some other stuff going on. It has not been a good week for WWE. Let's talk about Randy Orton first. For an update on Randy Orton, of course, he was suspended. He's got about 40-something more days left to go. I don't think he'll be eligible to return until the end of July, but there's now talk that Randy Orton may not even be back in WWE. And I don't buy this, by the way. I'm not saying the reports of WWE meeting with Randy and things not going well is not true. I'm just saying, in the end, I cannot see WWE cutting bait with Randy Orton the way they cut bait, for example, with Kurt Angle. Because they just felt Kurt Angle was a lost cause. They thought that he was going to probably drop dead one day. Kurt Angle's a crazy man. He was probably hopped up on all these pills, failing tests. And they felt that if, you know, not only for his benefit, but for their own benefit. They didn't want Kurt to die on their watch. They cut the guy loose. I don't even think he had to wait 90 days before he showed up on a TNA pay-per-view. I don't see them doing something like that with Randy Orton. And Randy Orton has a long-term contract with the company. I believe they have him locked up until 2019 or 2020. He had signed a 10-year deal not that long ago. And so they are well within their rights if they want to cut bait with him and then force him to sit out. But again, then you have a Brock Lesnar situation where can you really enforce something like that where, yes, the guy was under contract and something happened and so therefore you're going to sit him. But he's got to make a living somehow. I'm not sure that if they cut bait with Randy Orton, they could really stop him from going to a TNA if he wanted to. You know, maybe for a year, but not for 10 years. So that'll be an interesting situation to follow. I just don't think it's going to get to that point. But there was a report on the Super Luchas website this week that Orton had met with top officials, including Vince McMahon and Triple H, at Titan Towers in regards to his recent suspension. It was supposedly a very hostile meeting. It was not a good meeting. And there are a vocal contingent of people in WWE. Who these people are, I don't know. But there is a vocal minority in executive power in WWE, and maybe even some agents, I'm not sure they're all executives, who want Orton gone. They just feel he's difficult to work with. He now has two strikes against him. And again, that brings up the question of how do you handle the guy when he comes back? Can he be trusted? Can he ever be trusted in a top spot or with a championship? Or anything like that, when he's one strike away from termination and a one-year ban, essentially, which is what happens when you get a third strike from the company. So Vince McMahon is all pissed off, and he has every right to be because he's been pushing Orton as a top star on the SmackDown brand Even though Orton, you know, Orton really hasn't been at the very top for many months since he lost the championship to Mark Henry last year and put Mark Henry over. Not once, but twice on pay-per-view. But Vince is not happy because this suspension comes at a time when, particularly on SmackDown, there is a very big issue with talent depth. And they can ill afford to lose somebody of Orton's caliber right now, especially if it's not with an injury. It's not like Orton is hurt and can't go. He's ready to go right now. But now you've got all this other BS going on, and you can't use him, and you got to suspend him, and he's going to miss the 1,000th Raw in St. Louis, his hometown. And I can understand why Vince would be upset with Randy Orton. They've invested a lot in him over the years. They really have. And it's kind of like Brock Lesnar and why they were so upset with him many years back when he first left the company, because they put everything into him. They wanted to make him the big guy. The next big thing became the big thing. So, yes, you can understand their anger and frustration when the guy turns around and says, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore, I want to go play football, I'm done. I get that. But they're in a tough spot right now because you've got Orton, Jericho, and Rey Mysterio now all suspended at one time. All top guys suspended. And Mysterio's suspension is going to be up in the next couple of weeks. There's no indication that they're going to bring him back right away. He's not on any of the house show lineups for next month. You know, Sin Cara's back now, and they already had him in the lineups weeks before he was ready to come back. There's nothing new on Mysterio, so who knows when he'll be back. So you got all these guys suspended. Other guys are out with injuries. Wade Barrett is still out for at least another month, maybe two, with his injury. Now comes the news this week that Alberto Del Rio may have sustained a concussion, which apparently has kept him off the weekend house show and could potentially keep him off the pay-per-view next Sunday. No way out. He's going to be facing Sheamus for the World Heavyweight Championship. It's not exactly the main event of the show, but it's still a featured match. It's a World Championship match on the pay-per-view now that may not happen. Then the news that R-Truth, who is one half of the tag champs with Kofi Kingston, may have suffered a broken foot on the current tour of Spain. He either sprained it or he broke it. They've got a lot of problems right now. They really do, with injuries and just talent depth and suspensions. And of course, there's the situation with Brock Lesnar that nobody seems to know too much about, other than Brock Lesnar apparently has nuclear heat on him backstage. A lot of people very unhappy with him for showing up at that UFC pay-per-view a couple of weeks ago. Brock is very difficult to work with, and so there's just people that just don't like him. They didn't like him coming back in the first place and are probably out to get him and have their own personal agenda. The match with Triple H at SummerSlam is still a go at this point. That could always change. And I just want to mention here the same thing I said when that match was first teased, when they first did the confrontation between Triple H and Brock Lesnar, and Brock broke his arm, and there was talk that they were going to save the match for SummerSlam. I made a comment on the show that Triple H is going to beat Brock Lesnar, and a lot of people laughed at me, and they mocked me, and they said, oh, come on, that's not going to happen. I mean, yeah, Cena beat Brock, but they would never have Brock lose to Triple H. I mean, come on. Well, I stand by my prediction. I predict that Triple H, when and if they have a match, whenever it may be, Triple H is going to beat Brock Lesnar. Could I be wrong? Sure, I've been wrong before. But I am convinced. I'm convinced that Triple H is winning this match. And maybe now people are starting to see things a little bit more in my eyes, in that all of this talk about how upset they are with Brock, I cannot see Triple H, short of just tons of outside interference, agreeing to lose to a guy that I'm sure in his mind he perceives as not having the heart to be in this business. And Triple H is big on having respect for the business and being all about the business. And supposedly he, you know, wasn't a big fan of Brock the first time around either, especially when he left. He felt that he abandoned the company. Now he's back, and there's more trouble going on behind the scenes. And so I find it hard that Triple H is just going to come back after losing to The Undertaker clean as a sheet at WrestleMania and say, okay, sure, have Brock beat me. I find it inconceivable. Absolutely inconceivable. So I'm sticking with my prediction of Triple H beating Brock. But all of these different problems. And when I hear things like this, and I look at the lack of depth on the roster when it comes to main event talent, even upper mid-card talent, you know, they've got a lot of talented guys. Cody Rhodes, okay? Cody Rhodes was being pushed as the Intercontinental Champion for months, and they were doing a pretty good job of pushing him, too. They brought Booker T out of retirement so that he can beat Booker T, although Booker T beat him first. But then he beat Booker T in the rematch, and he was beating all these guys. He was beating guys bigger than him. He was beating Ezekiel Jackson on TV every week and all these different things. And all of a sudden, he lost the title to The Big Show at WrestleMania, which is fine. I'm not saying Cody needs to go undefeated or else he's being buried You know, which is the other thing that annoys me, by the way. Whenever somebody loses one match, automatically, oh, they're being buried. That doesn't mean they're being buried, okay? I think people forget the definition of being buried. So Cody lost one match, no big deal. The problem is they follow that up by having Cody lose on TV every single week, okay? He loses far too often. He lost to Christian. So you have this going on where Cody Rhodes is a young guy being pushed well, and now he's losing all of his matches and he's made to look like a jobber. And you've got a guy like Dolph Ziggler, who I know is a heel, okay? He's a heel, he bumps really well, he can sell for the good guys. Dolph Ziggler has something. People know it. Even regular wrestling fans who are not into work rate, and they're not on the internet all the time, okay? They look at a guy like Dolph and they have to see that the guy has talent. And every single week, they do everything in their power to just beat this guy down. Week after week after week. I was just waiting for him to break away from Swagger. And they finally broke him away from Swagger and are putting him in singles matches. And all he does is lose. He loses on SmackDown. He loses on Raw. Lose, lose, lose. He is a loser. Okay, so they have the talent, but then they fuck the talent. And so I look at this, and I can't help but shake my head. And somebody sent me a link to a show on WWE's YouTube channel called Superstar Toys. Again, toys with a Z at the end. Kind of like Battle Royal with cheese with a Z. I guess the Z thing is the cool thing. Kind of like back in the day, it was the Dudley Boys with a Z and the Hardy Boys with a Z. And Zeus had a Z carved into his head. Anyway, so there's this show on YouTube called Superstar Toys, and the latest one features Hunico, who is apparently a huge collector of Lucha Libre masks, many of which he has worn himself in matches, or won from other masked wrestlers while competing in Mexico, and they have some special meaning to him. Because even today, Mexican wrestling, you could say, is not quite what it used to be, much like the Japanese wrestling scene is not as strong as it used to be, the American wrestling scene, for Christ's sake. Wrestling just is not as strong as it used to be all over the world, but in Mexico, it still means a lot. The mask has a great symbolism. And mask matches and being unmasked, it's still a big deal. And he's talking about how the masks mean so much to him. He didn't buy them from a store. He didn't buy them off the internet. He actually earned each one of them. And he's got them all on this rack in his house, like multiple racks in his house. And I watched this video, and I instantly became a fan of the guy. Why is this airing on YouTube and not on TV? He just comes across as so likable. It took 5 minutes, and I became a fan of Hunico. And then you look at what they're doing with him and others like him on TV who also could probably get over better just by being allowed to be themselves, and it's depressing. Instead, he's a heel when he could easily get over as a babyface. But what's worse is that he's the stereotypical Mexican hoodlum, heel, vato, whatever the hell you want to call him, who comes out with Camacho riding a fucking bicycle that I guess we're supposed to think they stole from some little white girl with pigtails on the street. Just like the Mexicools used to come out riding a goddamn lawnmower to the ring. It's just so offensive in every way to me, but most importantly, it's offensive because this is a company that will turn around and wonder why these guys aren't able to get over like the guys used to. And they'll blame it on these guys like it's their fault. It's just amazing to me. It's just amazing to me. And while we're on the subject of being both offensive and stupid, I saw both segments on SmackDown this week that included one person doing an impersonation of somebody else. First of all, why you would have two segments on the same show with people doing impersonations, I don't understand that. That's pretty stupid. But let's start with the Ricardo Rodriguez impersonation of Sheamus. Okay? I actually thought he did a spot-on job of imitating the world champion. Ricardo is so much more entertaining than Alberto, it's scary. Ricardo was great. And it made perfect sense as well from my point of view. It was done to build up heat for the World Heavyweight Championship match at No Way Out between Sheamus and Alberto, which may or may not happen now. You know, Alberto and Ricardo are the heels. They're making fun of the babyface champion who then tries to get his revenge. Fine with me. No problem. Plus, Ricardo was really entertaining doing it. Okay? Then, on the same show, we get Hornswoggle, dressed up as good old JR. He comes out, he's got the black Resistol hat on his head, he's got the glasses, he's got the bottle of barbecue sauce, he's even speaking like Jim Ross, talking out of the side of his mouth, as though he has Bell's palsy. You know, one thing that WCW gets shit for to this day and was easily one of the most classless things they ever did, which is saying a lot, was the Oklahoma character. Okay, you had Ed Ferrara, the former WWF writer who came over to WCW with Vince Russo, doing an impersonation of Jim Ross and mocking the fact that he had Bell's palsy. And I'm sure this happened because Vince Russo didn't like Jim Ross. Probably still doesn't. So it was Russo's way of making fun of Jim Ross. Because I think Ferrara, I could be wrong about this, has since apologized and regrets doing it, but he did it. It was done to make fun of the fact that he talks funny, looks funny, and has Bell's palsy. And I can't think of one person who liked that angle or thought that it was a good idea, at least not anybody whose opinion I actually care about. It was offensive, it was mean-spirited, it was not necessary. In some ways, this segment from SmackDown on Friday night was worse than the Oklahoma character. For one, and I am by no means using this as a way to condone the WCW angle, but you can make the argument that, you know what, it was done by a rival organization that was at war with WWF at the time. Now, granted, the war was pretty much over by that point. Obviously, somebody forgot to tell WCW that. But still, it was WCW's way of sticking it to WWF's most popular announcer. Still no excuse for it, but fine. Both companies did some pretty petty things like that back in the day. Actually, they did a lot of that shit back in the day. Plus, the character was supposed to be a heel. Here, you have WWE itself doing it to embarrass JR, the very company that still employs the man and pays him. He isn't even on TV anymore, but, you know, Vince McMahon, he never wastes an opportunity to stick it to him. Hey, we gave him some good publicity on Monday night for his barbecue sauce, so we can't let him get off scot-free with that kind of publicity without making sure he pays the price for it. Barbecue sauce that they themselves, mind you, are now profiting off of since they sell it exclusively on WWE Shop. I just thought I would mention that. But this is not some rival promotion doing this. It's the very company the man still works for. And last time I checked, Hornswoggle was a babyface. He is a kid's character. He's the good guy. He's not some little heel troll. I mean, I know he's going to play the role of a little heel evil troll in a movie soon, but this wasn't a heel turn. What is the purpose of him coming out and making fun of the man's Bell's palsy? Talking out of one side of his mouth. That's what really pissed me off mostly about this segment. And then at ringside, you've got the babyface announcers, Booker T and Josh Matthews. They're yucking it up. They're laughing. They're having a grand old time. And the only heel announcer, Michael Cole, of all people, is the one person not laughing. But everybody else is. What sense does any of this make? Can you explain that to me? What sense does any of this make? They do all of this anti-bullying stuff, the Be a Star campaign, all of that nonsense. It's all such complete and utter bullshit. All of it. It just makes me want to vomit. The Be a Star stuff is a nice thing to do. It sends a nice message to kids. They're actually bringing one of their rallies here to Brooklyn in a couple of weeks. I'll probably be there. I don't know who they're sending yet, but, you know, it's just such complete bullshit. And they don't do it because they actually want to eradicate bullying. And, you know, they do it. They don't do it for the right reasons. They do it because they feel they have to. They do it for good PR. They do it to make the company look good, to make Linda McMahon look good. And we have to sit there every single week and watch these stupid commercials on television. Show tolerance and respect, they say. Be a star. Take your star and shove it up your ass. You know, Vince McMahon was deposed by Congress many years ago when Chris Benoit did those horrible things that he did, took his own life and killed his wife and killed his kid, and there was a lot of talk that, oh boy, this is going to be it for wrestling, and there's going to be congressional oversight and regulation of the professional wrestling business, and of course nothing ever happened. Nothing ever does change, because they don't care about wrestling. It was a big story, and then it became yesterday's news, and so all the politicians forgot about it. Because in the end of the day, they really didn't give a shit about it to begin with. But Vince McMahon and Dixie Carter, by the way, were both deposed. They had to come give congressional testimony on Capitol Hill, and Vince was there for like hours, 6 hours or 8 hours, just answering questions. And I don't know if the testimony was supposed to be leaked or not, but it got leaked. It came out. And Vince made a comment that was very telling to me at that time. It was maybe the most brutally honest thing I've ever heard Vince McMahon say. He didn't say it in public. Again, he said it to Congress in private in answering questions, possibly under oath. he was asked about, it was either the wellness policy or the policy they have of, they have a letter they send out each year to anybody who has ever worked for the company ever, offering rehab for substance abuse and stuff like that, which is a nice thing for them to do. They don't have to do it, but they do. It may have been about that, but he was asked about that. And Vince's response was quite blunt. He said, it's good PR. I do it for PR. That's the only reason we do it. We do it for PR. A brutally honest answer, but I'm happy he said it because it confirms everything that I've ever thought when it comes to this kind of stuff. They have the Make-A-Wish videos, and I don't want to speak ill of the Make-A-Wish stuff because they've been doing a lot of charity work like that for a lot of years. You know, Hulk Hogan, even back in the day at his peak, was doing a lot of Make-A-Wish stuff on behalf of the WWF, and I'm sure that's all genuine, and I may not like them putting all those videos and shoving it down our throats to make John Cena look good every week, and I'm sure John Cena doesn't like that either, by the way, in his defense, because he does a lot of things that we never hear about. He does a lot of good things and should be commended for it, but when it comes to stuff like, you know, the be a star, anti-bullying, you know, bullying is such a horrible thing, and you see them do this kind of shit on their television show week after week after week, and they make fun of people. Molly Holly has a big ass, and Mickey James has a fat ass, and Vicky Guerrero is a fat ass, and Natalia, I mean, just, I can give so many different examples of this stuff, and I'm sure their argument and people's argument might be, well, it's just a television show. It's all storyline. Bullshit! What storyline is the Jim Ross stuff? Especially when it's a babyface coming out and doing it. It's not like Michael Cole is putting on a fat suit and coming out there and making fun of JR. I can't be the only one that just is completely annoyed by this. So, anyway, I just wanted to mention the Hornswoggle thing because it pissed me off. I liked the Ricardo thing. It was entertaining enough. I didn't see the point in this at all. I thought it was bullshit. And at a time when they're wondering and they're really panicking because of the injuries and the suspensions and the ratings are just going down. I mean, the ratings are plummeting for this company. And they'll have a rebound week and all that. But look at the base average for Raw now. I mean, before you give it another 6 months and it's going to be normal for Raw to get a 2.8. And there'll be a Raw 6 or 9 months from now that gets a 2.5 and they're going to freak out. And then Raw will shoot back up to a 2.8 and they'll be happy. That's the baseline now. I mean, that's kind of the peak that we've reached. It's not about a 3 or a 3.4 or a 3.5. Fewer and fewer people are interested in watching the product, and you wonder why. There's so many things that they could be doing. And look, there's a lot of things that are out of their control. They can't help it when somebody gets hurt. I mean, they can if they gave them more time off, but there are things that happen that are not the company's fault. People get hurt. People do something stupid. They take a drug they shouldn't take, and they get popped for it. I get that. But there's so many little things they can be doing to help get some of these other guys over. The Hunico thing just jumped out at me. I don't expect Hunico to ever be somebody that wrestles for a world championship, but for God's sakes, when the guy shows up on TV, I could care less. I know he'll probably have a good match. He had a great match on Raw with Sin Cara a week or two ago, but they've done nothing to make me care about this guy. And this one stupid little 5-minute video on YouTube did more to make me care about the guy than anything they've ever done on TV, and this video will never see the light of day on television, and it just pisses me off. Raw on Monday night was in Greenville, South Carolina. Lots of talk that Ric Flair was sighted in town. Of course, he did not appear on the show. I'm sure before long he will be. Hey, maybe on the 1,000th Raw, they'll trot Ric Flair out there if they can get this situation resolved before then with TNA. This was a show that was not good. It was not a good show. Not everything was crap. But again, it was what I would call a bad show overall. Just not that enjoyable. Certainly not boring. I will give them that. It was not boring, but that by no means means it was a good show. And there were the usual things that pissed me off, usual things that made no sense, mostly contained to the opening segment with Michael Cole and John Cena and that whole storyline, which I'm not a fan of. First of all, I have given Michael Cole credit on this podcast in recent weeks because I am not a fan of the over-the-top heel Michael Cole. I think we can all agree that he was so obnoxious he was turning people off. And then obviously Vince or somebody said something to him and he's been more tolerable. And even at some of the recent pay-per-view shows and everything, he's put in some good performances. He can be a good announcer when he is allowed to be. And I've given him credit for that. I think at the last pay-per-view, maybe it was the Over the Limit show, I went out of my way to comment on how good Michael Cole was in his role. Well, obviously Vince McMahon woke up on the wrong side of the bed that morning, or the bipolar Vince McMahon reared his ugly head. It was evil Vince back in the production truck on headset this week or something like that, and he told Cole to just revert back to his over-the-top, obnoxious, smarmy heel character, because Cole was intolerable on the show. He came in the ring, he was interviewing John Cena in the opening segment, and giving Cena all the different reasons why the Big Show's behavior can be directly attributed to John Cena. It's all John Cena's fault that Big Show went nuts and was killing people on TV every week, because Cena didn't come to his defense. He didn't come to his rescue on that Raw when Laurinaitis fired him. And Cena's logic was, well, that's true, I didn't, but if I would have beaten Laurinaitis at the pay-per-view, then Big Show would have just been rehired back. And they're going back and forth with all this stuff. And, one thing that really struck me here was John Cena was making fun of John Laurinaitis' voice. I think this was when Laurinaitis came out and announced that Cena was going to have a match against anybody. And, of course, in the end, Cena ended up picking Michael Cole. And Laurinaitis was on his best behavior because he was going to be evaluated. He says he's made a comment about how everybody's job is being evaluated, everybody's under the microscope. You know, even though the segment that followed with David Otunga backstage, when Otunga told Laurinaitis that Vince was going to be back, and he played it off as though he was all surprised, but I don't know why, since he knew that he was being evaluated anyway. But nevertheless, Cena's out there making fun of Laurinaitis' voice. And I could have sworn that, you know, after the last pay-per-view, he made it very clear, Laurinaitis did, that anybody who made fun of his voice would be punished and or fired for doing so. In fact, the Big Show was fired for that very reason. He was fired for making fun of John Laurinaitis' voice on an episode of Raw. That's what led to this whole storyline in the first place. So there's John Cena once again mocking his voice on television, and no mention was made of this. Of course, he wasn't fired. He wasn't even threatened because of it. It just never came up. And this is one of the things that really makes people, it makes it very difficult to care. It makes it very difficult to give a shit about anything they say when it comes to these storylines or these stipulations. Michael Cole made a comment at one point, you can't touch an announcer. Really? When did that rule get instituted? I don't remember that rule ever being mentioned on the show. You can't touch an announcer? Since when? They just make shit up as they go along, and it doesn't matter because next week they're just going to forget it. Just like they did here. How come John Cena is not fired? How come Sheamus, when he came running out that one week, when he also made a remark about nobody putting their hands on him or they'll be fired, and the very first thing that happens is Sheamus comes out from the back and barrels over Laurinaitis. He crashes right into him. And I know they addressed it on SmackDown, but it doesn't matter. They didn't say anything about why he wasn't fired. He should have been fired. Why wasn't he fired? That's why this whole thing about, I'm going to fire you if you do this, or you'll be fired. How can anybody take the firing stipulation seriously? Especially when it comes to John Cena, for crying out loud. It's just, why should I care? Give me a reason to care. Stop insulting me and making me think I'm a fucking idiot, and I'm just going to forget. Oh, people will forget. They don't care. People do care. People want to care, and they make it impossible to because of stupid shit like this. So you have a storyline here, John Cena, the Big Show, all this bullshit, right? I don't care. I don't give a shit. And this is one of the reasons why. Because they'll say something one week, and the very next week, they'll forget what they said. They'll change the rules as they go along. I don't care. So this whole segment, to me, was a waste of time. This whole storyline is a waste of time. I like the fact that the Big Show now has a mean streak. We've seen this a gazillion times. He's worked for this company for 148 years. He's gone back and forth, face and heel, so many times. He'll go from being the monster to being the comedy figure to being the monster to being the comedy figure. Now he's back in monster mode, and that's fine. And God knows they need an unstoppable monster on the show since Brock Lesnar is nowhere to be found. But it doesn't matter because in a month or two, he'll be right back to the way he was. So who gives a shit? And I don't care about any of this stuff. And then the fact that they set up this John Cena, Michael Cole main event match. That's the big main event for Monday Night Raw. And I was sure that the segment would do fine because, you know, these kinds of Crash TV segments tend to do well. Bizarrely enough, whenever Jim Ross is put in a match, which thankfully isn't that often, Jim Ross segments, Jim Ross matches, again, a non-wrestler, tend to do very well. So I was pretty sure that this segment would do better than Raw did the previous week when they did that 2.7, and they did. although not by much. The show this week did a 2.9, so they're still hovering under that 3.0 barrier, and good. I say deservedly so. I think the rating should go lower. Maybe then they'll actually do something. So they do this match, and I want to skip ahead here to the end of the show. Actually, you know what? Before I do that, I have a couple of other comments. Let me just get this out of the way before I launch into that. Vince McMahon is coming back next week. We have a three-hour show next week. This will be a good preparation for what we can expect next month, I guess, when Raw goes 3 hours for good. And Vince McMahon will be on TV to evaluate John Laurinaitis' job performance. And I presume that if he's unhappy with the job Laurinaitis is doing, then he will, what else, threaten to fire him. Or maybe he'll put him in the Kiss My Ass Club. That's what Vince loves to do. Very homoerotic Vince can be when he tells people to bend over, or get down on their knees and pucker up and kiss his rear end. And on this show, we had a man in the main event with a physique that was not particularly good, not that it matters, but being doused and drenched in barbecue sauce. I would be completely embarrassed if a non-wrestling fan caught me watching that last segment on Raw. Completely embarrassed. But back to Vince. I had a thought during the week. I mentioned on Twitter that June is typically the month that WWE tries to kill Vince McMahon on TV. They try to bump him off. They've done that at least twice before in the month of June, I believe. The one time with the limo explosion many years ago. Of course, the other time when he was giving away the $1 million on Raw, and then the stage fell on top of him. So if I were Vince McMahon, I would be fearing for my safety on Raw this Monday night. I would be watching my back. I would grow eyes in the back of my head. I'd bring Patterson and Briscoe out there to watch my back if I were Vince McMahon on Raw this Monday night. Also, Ryback had a squash match on Raw. This was his first squash on Raw. He's been doing this for weeks now on SmackDown. And these two guys that came out there had the best names ever. I think one was Stan Stansky or something. But we had a jobber by the name of Arthur Rosenberg on Raw. I never in a million years would have ever expected that there would be an Arthur Rosenberg on Raw. That is my new favorite all-time wrestler name. I thought Gene Snitsky was bad, but Arthur Rosenberg, wow. That was something else. Speaking of a non-wrestling friend watching the show, I actually talked to one who did catch part of Raw Monday night, and he actually enjoyed the Ryback squash. And I could see why, because he's in there throwing these guys around like they're nothing. And these days in WWE, you don't really have a lot of guys like that. You know, back in the day, big guys was kind of the order of the day. Everybody was big. It was a rare thing if you were small. Well, now it's kind of the opposite. Ryback is a monster. You know, how he is able to naturally maintain that physique, I'm not so sure about that. But he looks impressive. He throws guys around. This is what you should do with the guy. I made the comment a week or two ago that I think we've reached a point where he needs real opponents. How many goddamn squash matches can you do? But being that this was the first one on Raw, I think it's okay. And it was impressive. I mean, at one point he threw, I don't know if it was poor Arthur Rosenberg or not, but he threw one of these poor bastards so high in the air that on my 25-inch television, he went completely off the screen. I lost sight of the guy in the air. It was very impressive. And from one non-wrestling fan that I spoke to, he thought it was the coolest thing on the entire show. So they've got something with Ryback. You know, I do think he has the potential to be a top babyface killer guy. But you gotta cool it with the squash matches and get him in there with some named people at some point. I also loved during the tag match on this show, they had Kofi Kingston and R-Truth back out there 1 week after the Big Show slaughtered them the week before. And they came out, their ribs were all taped up, but they were all wrapped up like mummies. And Jerry Lawler is on commentary trying to convince us how much pain, how much agony Kofi and Truth are in with their injuries. And yet, at no point during their match, even when they made their entrance, at no point during the actual match did they show any signs of being hurt. Kofi is out there flying around like he always is. You know, you could at least, you know, hold your ribs and be like, ow, or something. Nothing. Not one time during the entire match. That's just completely ridiculous. So we get to the main event segment. Let's talk about John Cena and Michael Cole. I know some people liked this match. They thought it was entertaining. These are probably the same people who thought that Laurinaitis and Cena was entertaining at the pay-per-view, and that's fine. I can kind of sort of see that. I was not one of those people. But what struck me is, before I get to the actual match, I have to make a comment here. SEScoops.com, it's a great website, right? They have the sound off, so that alone makes their website great. But SE Scoops, in case you haven't noticed, is trying to have more features on the website. Some more voices, fun things, and one of the new things they have, besides the sound off and the mailbag and the occasional editorial from myself and others, they now have a new, what I presume will be a weekly feature, called the Top 5 Raw Moments, basically. And it's written by somebody by the name of Antoine Hoffman. I am not familiar with Mr. Hoffman. I'm not even sure if Antoine is a listener of Sound Off. I hope he is, but he may not be. And I read his first feature, his inaugural Raw feature here on SE Scoops. And I can see where he's trying to look for the silver lining in certain things. And I'm not saying that Raw was an entirely horrible show. So what I thought I would do here, really quickly, is bring up Mr. Hoffman's column here. He did a top five great things from Raw Monday night. He tried to look at the positives. And number five on his list was the match between Kane and CM Punk. They had a match. Stipulation was that there must be a winner. Kane ended up winning. Now, Kane is part of the WWE Championship match at No Way Out with him and Punk and Daniel Bryan, which I don't like, but that's how it is. And so they wanted to make Kane look strong here. And they had an okay match. By Kane's standards, with some of the matches he's had recently, this match was actually good. It was a good match. I will give you that. Okay? So that's CM Punk and Kane. Now, number four on Mr. Hoffman's list here was Ryback's annihilation of Stansky and Rosenberg, which I just talked about. And again, I thought for what it was actually very good. He had a dominant performance. No problem. Number three, he mentions the metamorphosis of the Big Show. They had a video feature on the show, similar to the one they did with Brock Lesnar, one of these pre-taped sit-down things, with various clips of him killing dudes. And that's fine, because again, they want to make Big Show look like a monster. Fine. Even though, again, they've done this a million times, and I'm kind of numb to it at this point, but nothing wrong with it. It was, you know, it was an okay video. It wasn't as good as the Brock Lesnar one, but that's fine. Dolph Ziggler and Sheamus had a match on this show. This was number two on Mr. Hoffman's list. And they actually did have a pretty good match. I've seen them have better, but the match was good. And again, Dolph Ziggler is awesome when it comes to selling people's finishers. When Sheamus kicked him in the face with that bro kick, I mean, he looked like he put his foot through Dolph's head, okay? It looked awesome. It was a great thing. But again, Dolph lost. And I'm not saying Dolph should beat Sheamus. Sheamus is the world champion, but don't put him in there with Sheamus. This is what I was talking about before. Dolph is at a point now where he can't be on television losing every week. It just weakens him that much more in the eyes of the fans. Then we get to the number one thing on Mr. Hoffman's list, and this is why I wanted to bring it up. I'm giving him some free publicity here. He lists the John Cena-Michael Cole match as the number one great thing on Raw from Monday night. I want to read you, word for word, it's not a lot, what he had to say about this. Okay, he says, and I quote, "How often in modern-day wrestling does one storyline excel in just about every department listed in the aforementioned criteria in one night? WWE's creative team gets bashed when a program is not to the people's liking, and in many cases the criticism is warranted. However, in this instance, the brains behind this operation as well as the characters involved pulled off a work of art. Whether it was the back and forth between Michael Cole and John Cena over the source of Big Show's rage, John Laurinaitis' exercise of power, Cole's excessive groveling and pleading to avoid his eventual fate, the pivotal match, he says, between John Cena and Tensai, or the comical Cole-Cena match itself, the segments featuring these three turned out more compelling than expected, despite Big Show's absence," because again, Big Show was not physically on the show this week. He says, "It proved to be an indirect sell of Cena and Show's cage match at No Way Out. The June 4th installment of Monday Night Raw proved to be a stellar show." It's his word, not mine. He says, a stellar show. What I want to know is, what the hell is this guy smoking? Are you on crack? A stellar show? You're going to throw around the word stellar on a show like this? Really? Not a good, not a very encouraging first effort, I would say here. I think His judgment on this particular segment leaves a lot to be desired. Again, my opinion, hey, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, and I was enjoying reading it until I came across the number one thing on his list, and he had to go in there and say that, and I just said, you know what? Good luck with this column going forward, my friend. A stellar show. This segment on Raw Monday Night in the main event was an abomination in every sense of the word. I mentioned before the fact that it's bad enough I have to sit here and watch another man bare-chested, be covered in barbecue sauce and lathered in barbecue sauce. Michael Cole, of all people, being lathered in barbecue sauce. He's not exactly, GQ Man of the Year or anything like that. So that was bad enough. But this segment was a complete waste. And what makes it even worse, and I don't see a lot of people talking about this, one of the things that screwed John Cena over at the pay-per-view against Laurinaitis is the fact that he had the opportunity to beat him multiple times. And instead of beating him, he toyed with him. So in the end, he got fucked and he lost. And he came out the next night and his character was scripted to be all defensive and say, oh, there's a lot of people out there that say that I could have beaten him and I was too busy playing around. But what they don't realize is that the Big Show, if he was going to interfere, he would have interfered no matter what. And I made the argument that I would still like to see that jetpack that Big Show would have strapped to his back, since when he had Laurinaitis in the STF, Big Show was nowhere near ringside. They still have not provided, by the way, the aforementioned jetpack. I'm still waiting. So that was bad enough. But Cena already paid the price for fooling around and not just going ahead and beating the guy at the pay-per-view. Now, granted, there was a lot more at stake in that match, but still, here he is against Michael Cole doing the exact same thing. He's fucking around with the guy, he's making him apologize to Jim Ross and promote his barbecue sauce, and he's pouring barbecue sauce on him, and he's doing all these different things. And meanwhile, Tensai, who he beat in a match before this, comes back out, gives him the Baldo Bomb, and he was a hair count away from losing again to a non-wrestler and being embarrassed on television. This time he kicked out, he ended up beating Michael Cole. But again, the same thing. How stupid can one person be? Everything about this segment was fucked. There wasn't anything good about this. I didn't take pleasure in seeing Michael Cole be embarrassed because I've already seen Michael Cole be embarrassed. He had to kiss Jerry Lawler's foot, for Christ's sake. They toned down his act. He was a good announcer. I was giving him props. One night, all of a sudden, he's dialing it up again to the point where I almost muted the show at one point. And so I'm supposed to love the fact, oh, he got embarrassed in the opening segment. He didn't get embarrassed. The company embarrassed itself. This was a complete waste of time. I watched this, and then I watched Impact. It's no wonder I thought Impact was such a good show. Because this is what I'm subjected to on Monday nights. This is what we're going to be in store for. 3 hours of this bullshit every week starting next month. Which was my biggest fear. There's so many different things they could be doing with those 3 hours. The cruiserweights and pushing more people. They're not going to do any of that, okay? If you think that they're actually going to suddenly change their whole mentality and they're going to start pushing all these people and not end the push after 3 weeks and things are going to be so much different, you're full of shit, okay? This is what we're going to see more of. And this show on Monday night, when Vince comes back 3 hours, this is going to be a litmus test. This is going to be a sign of what we're in for starting July 23rd. This sucked. How the hell anybody can call this show stellar when this was your main event? Like I said, you've got to be on crack. Man, I didn't realize how much WWE really got under my skin this week until I put my notes down and my thoughts together and I recorded the show just now. Boy, did they piss me off this week. Let's get into the shout-outs. Let's calm things down a little bit here. Got a bunch of them to get to. You can email me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. That is the email address for any questions for the mailbag. And, of course, shout-outs and that sort of thing here. This first one, Dylan Siraki writes in. He is a Fantastic Four member and is celebrating a birthday today, June 10th. He says, I was wondering if I could get a shout-out. I am turning 13 and have been listening to your show since I was 11. Wow. So I guess you can say that I have been part of your childhood then. I'm like a mentor or something. That's a frightening thought. Happy birthday, Dylan. Liam from Leeds, England says he turns 20 today. Says, I would love to be mentioned for my lack of an accomplishment in that I simply lived for another 366 days. Leap year, he points out. Well, an honest man. He has nothing in particular to celebrate other than living another year. That's always a good thing. So happy birthday to Liam. Matt Terry writes in. He wants to know if he can have a shout-out for passing his freshman year of high school. Hell yes, you can. He also sent me a link to episode 18 of Are You Serious? That's the WWE YouTube show where Josh Matthews and Road Dogg watch and poke fun at some fantastically terrible wrestle crap clips. This episode included a classic clip from Nitro that I actually once talked about here on the Sound Off, where Sid Vicious walks out to the parking lot and finds his car flattened. Thanks to Bill Goldberg. And his reaction to this is just priceless. I mean, if you've never seen this clip, you seriously have to see it for yourself. Just Google it, YouTube it, it'll come right up. It is funny stuff. So thanks to Matt for that. Rick from South Carolina also writes in. He wants to give a shout-out to his sister, Carrie, who just graduated from high school. He says, I remember when she was into wrestling. She would run into the room when we got UPN for SmackDown. Oh, God, UPN. Remember those days. Because she wanted to see the rap battle between John Cena and Kenzo Suzuki. Looking back on it, it was probably not the greatest segment in the world, but one memory that I will look back on as being one of the bonding moments that I shared with my sisters. That's a nice thing for Rick to say. John from Corpus Christi, Texas, a listener since episode 16, writes in, when you met a few of the WWE stars in Miami, did you ask them if they ever listened to your show? And do you ever wonder if any of your loyal listeners are WWE talents? Also, can I get a super late marriage shout-out for my wife, Valerie? Going to leave some awesome feedback on iTunes, too. How are you, Valerie? Hopefully she's listening. With the interviews in Miami, it really was a bang-bang type of thing, you know, one right after the other after the other. We did have a chance to chat briefly with pretty much all the guys after each interview. We took some photos with them. It was a really cool time, but there really wasn't an opportunity to talk about that, nor do I think it would have been appropriate to bring it up at that time. As far as whether or not any WWE guys listen to the Sound Off, I hope not after this week's show. I'm sure they listen to lots of different shows and lots of different podcasts, and especially with all the time they have on the road. I mean, you got to find something to listen to. That's all I'm really going to say about that. We're going to just leave it at that. Last thing I want to do here is I want to give another plug, to Brendan Dando. He's got his own show, but he's been a fan of the podcast for the longest time. He is, I believe, down in Australia, I believe. He conducted an interview this past week with Jeff Jarrett, potential future TNA Hall of Fame inductee, one of the founding fathers of what is now Impact Wrestling. And you can find the link to his interview. It's an audio interview. It's up on YouTube. He wanted to know if I can give a plug to that. He says, appreciate your time and giving me 90 minutes of good listening each week. Well, thank you, Brendan. And the easiest way to find that video, by the way, if you just go to YouTube and type in Dando, D-A-N-D-O, Jeff Jarrett, it'll be the first thing that comes up. It says Australian interview with Jeff Jarrett, about 20 minutes long. Pretty cool stuff, so check that out. And that's going to do it for this week. I'm going to have to bypass some of the mailbag questions. I'm all ranted out here, just completely exhausted after that. Just that's what WWE does to me these days. I mean, maybe they'll turn it around, but I don't know. Their recent shows have not given me a lot of hope. And, you know, that coupled with the bad luck they've had, it's bad times right now for WWE. Hopefully they'll turn it around and I'll have some good things to say in the future here on this show. Email me your questions, though. I'm still answering them, and we'll probably have a mailbag back on the show next week. TheSolomonster@gmail.com is the email address for that. You can follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster. Over 1,400 followers and counting. Friend me on Facebook, facebook.com/TheSolomonster. Don't forget to check out Steve Willerett's illustration that he did of The Solomonster. It is really good stuff. Again, really cool of him to do that. So leave him some love. You can check that out on Facebook. And subscribe to the show on iTunes. Type in the name of the show, click subscribe, automatically downloads for you whenever a new podcast is posted. It's the easiest thing in the world, and you can leave me some feedback there as well. If you do, I will give you a shout-out on the show. And my YouTube channel, the username is TheSolomonster, all one word. I put that little Gangrel clip, which was cool of him to do, by the way. I put that on YouTube. You can check it out there. A lot of cool stuff. A lot of cool fans I've got listening to this show, doing all kinds of cool stuff. They're drawing pictures of me, and they're getting wrestlers to give me shout-outs, and really good stuff. So thanks for that. We'll be back next week with episode 223 of The Sound Off, talking the three-hour Raw. We'll maybe have some Slammiversary thoughts and thoughts on whatever happens with TNA. They'll have another live show coming up on Spike at 8 p.m. on Thursday night, so we'll get into all that stuff next week. Until then, be well, stay safe, thank you for supporting the show, and we'll see you right back here next week.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster sounds off on SCScoops.com.